January 30th, 2004. This is Barbara Seifels, Exhibits and Collections Manager for the Washington County Museum, interviewing Lila Ashenbrenner, Deputy Chief Hillsborough Police Department. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, how did you decide on law enforcement as a career path?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I don't have any family history of any of my family members being in law enforcement. And when I went to college, I had no idea that I wanted to get into law enforcement. It wasn't until after I'd gotten out of college and I was actually working at the Cornelius Veterinary Clinic, and one of our clients came in, Lance Fredericks, had a German Shepherd, and he worked for the Sheriff's Office, and became friends with he and his wife, and so he invited me to go on a ride-along with the Sheriff's Office, because I knew I didn't want to stay working at the vet clinic. My husband was the veterinarian, and we were just getting the clinic started, so it's like, okay, don't want to stay here, we'll get it started, and then I want to go do something else. But I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to work in an office. I didn't want an office job where we were just kind of confined all day. So anyway, Deputy Fredericks asked me to go on a ride-along, and I did. And I was hooked from the get-go. I thought, this is for me. I just loved the immediacy of patrol. I mean, you never knew what you were going to be doing, always something different. And you were helping the community and helping people. And that was important. I didn't realize that exactly how that would be an impact or how important that it was. But it's like, oh boy, you get to go out and help people. Sometimes in a good way, and sometimes for some people they don't perceive it to be such a good way. But so Hillsborough had an opening, and there were three women that applied, and that's back when we had to go out and do the physical agility test, and we had to climb over the 6-foot fence and do sit-ups and push-ups and run and all of those types of things.
And what year?
1977 is when I actually got hired. I think it was June. It's either the 12th or the 13th, I think I remember. I think it's June 12th that I got hired. So I went through all the testing and ended up coming out number one in the process. Didn't get hired right away. There were a couple of men that were ahead of me, and that's kind of how law enforcement was back in those days. The two gentlemen that hired before me, one was a wrestler and one was a boxer. So I just kind of bit my tongue, even though I knew I scored number one, and thought, okay, I'll just wait. And sure enough, in a couple of months, I did get hired.
Were there any kind of quotas or anything like that that required the police to hire women, or what was their perspective? I mean, were women sort of not particularly welcome, or?
I think that's very true. Back in those days, I mean, a real, man's world, if you will, I mean, it was all men in law enforcement. At that time, there was one other female that was an officer in the department, and so when I came on board, it's like, oh wow, we've got like two females. And it was funny because they didn't want us both working like in the same division for very long. It's like, once I got hired, then they moved her into investigations. And so it was kind of strange how things worked. It was kind of like, well, they would never put both of us on the same shift, because heaven knows you couldn't have two females working the same shift. And there was an attitude about women in law enforcement at that time. I mean, you definitely had to prove yourself.
Was it that just the idea that it wasn't, a woman's place to be in this kind of, aggressive environment, or?
I think that was a lot of it. There was certainly a perception that we couldn't do the job. I mean, that physically we wouldn't be capable of doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, a concern by some male officers. And then there was some of the chauvinistic attitude that, they would have to look out for us,
mm-hmm.
And that we weren't equal to them. So there was a lot of that to overcome.
So then you started in 1977, and how did your career sort of develop? You were an officer first?
Actually, I think that's one of the areas that I think I am extremely fortunate. I have had a fantastic career. I have had the ability to, I can't say now, for a long time I held practically every job that the department offered. now we've grown so much and expanded, we have so many different opportunities. That's not true, but when I got hired as a police officer and worked the road, I was the first female dog master in the state, and that was just an incredible experience. And what kind of happened along the way is, as I got started in my career, the department started to grow. And so as the department grew and opportunities became available, I was able to reach out and was successful in a lot of those opportunities. So as the department grew, I grew with it and was able to expand and reach out. So that, and that's been very exciting for all the things I've been able to do.
When you first started, was there a kind of basic training, or how did that work? I imagine with the canine unit, there's specific training that comes along with that.
Actually, yes. When you first get hired in Oregon, you have to be hired by a police department before you can go to the police academy, which is different than in some other states. So you get hired by a police department, then they send you away to the academy. So you go down there and you get trained, and then you come back to the department. Nowadays, you're with an FTO or a coach, and we have an extended program that you would spend with them. Back in those days, once I got back from the academy, I was on my own. I mean, I had a coach ride with me to go through a manual where you check the box that you have talked about these things, maybe a total of 8 hours. I mean, now we have a 17-week program. So law enforcement's come a long way from that perspective.
What was the police academy like? Were there any other women there?
Actually, there were three other women, all from Portland Police Bureau. And so a small group of us, but...
Out of how many total
from that? Oh, probably out of about 30. Mm-hmm, definitely.
So after the academy, you came back and had very little supervision or assistance, so you were kind of on your own, and I guess with a partner then, you did patrols?
Actually, no. We didn't have partners. We're not large enough for that, so we were all individual in our own cars, had our own districts out patrolling. I mean, obviously we covered each other and helped each other out, but so I worked in patrol for a few years and then had the opportunity to become a canine officer, and something that I had a strong interest in, always been an animal lover, worked in a vet clinic, so took that opportunity. That was an extensive training. It was over 400 hours of training that we went through in tracking. I had a long-haired German Shepherd, Buck, and I think I've got a picture of him here somewhere. But just that was a great experience. We had a lot of really great dog cases that we made, and it was fun, and that was very exciting because, I mean, it was all the hot calls. You know, something happened now and we were on it. I mean, there were several cases that we had that...
Can you give me an example of one that was particularly exciting or dramatic?
I think probably the most exciting dog case I had, we graduated the first part of April. July, we had a situation where...
I'm sorry, do you remember what year this was?
Let's see. Let me look. Here's a picture. It was July 26, 1978. We got a call from Washington County, and it was a situation where two guys had gone to a car dealership, test drove this car, kind of kidnapped the car dealer, ended up letting him off. They went down to King City, they robbed a bank, and then they fled. Well, Oregon State Police got on them and followed them out into Shoals area where they dumped their car and they ran. So state police put the alert out, Washington County responded, the FBI responded, the state police had, and they called Hillsborough because they knew that we had tracking dogs. So Lieutenant Gordon Ogden, who was the one that trained us, he came up from Coos Bay to train us. He had his dog, and then I was just coming on duty. It was in the afternoon. So we took off and went out there. Gordon started his dog first and took off on a track. You always have a covered officer when you're working a dog because you're watching your dog and reading it. You need somebody else to be watching, you know, ahead, to be your eyes kind of to see what's going on ahead. Anyway, he got about a half mile out and said, well, I'll go back and start Buck. So I headed back and took an OSP officer with me. And about halfway back, it was a really hot day, as late July can be. And he said, well, I'll wait here for you. And I said, I don't know that I'm necessarily coming this way. You need to come with me. And he was hot, he was tired, and he was going to wait there. So I'm gung-ho. I go back, I get Buck out of the car, and it's like, where is he? Find him, which is the command we would use to find a person. We immediately took off into the woods and down a ravine, not anywhere close to where the other dog team had gone. And we got down in the woods, and all of a sudden, here's a brown paper bag with these clothes in it. Well, I know I'm hot on the track because these guys have now changed clothes. So we keep going. It's Buck, he can find. Where is he? Where is he? And I can just tell. I mean, he's hot on the track. His nose is to the ground. We're going. And all of a sudden, we get down in this ravine, and it's all wooded. And there's a big tree, big old trunk sticking up and everything. And we came around the edge of it, and here's these two bank robbers. And I'm thinking, holy cow. I mean, I'm probably just as shocked as they are at this point because, you know, this is all pretty exciting. And, I mean, Buck's looking at him, and with this long-haired shepherd and this big old collar, I mean, they're looking at this dog, and I knew that they were both armed, and so my thought was, oh, well, I've got to get cover. I mean, obviously, you know, I pointed my weapon at him and had him up standing, and I was trying to get out on my radio for cover, and I couldn't get out. I was down in this ravine, and nobody could hear me. So I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, I could fire a warning shot, but then I thought, no, with all these cops out here that come running in, I might get shot. I'm not going to do that. So I had them stand up and pull their shirts up and turn around because I wanted to know where the weapons were. Obviously very concerned about that. Couldn't see the weapons in their waistbands, and so I didn't know where they were. So I was, you know, it makes you pretty nervous at that point. So it's like, okay, guys, we're going to walk up to this field right up here because I knew when we came out of the ravine there was a field up there. And we had the area totally surrounded with, there was probably 40 law enforcement officers out there. And I figured they looked at me and probably thought, oh my God, a woman with a gun, we better do what she says. So we take up out of the ravine and get up to the top, and Pete Polis, a sergeant with Washington County, was up there across the field and looks over and just screams on the radio, she's got him, and he comes flying over. And so we get him into custody and find out they've buried the guns down in the ravine and the money. So we went back and did an article search. Recovered over $10,000 that they'd stolen from the bank, and then it was about an hour later before they got the two guys back to the office, interviewed them, and found out that they had buried both their guns. Well, when we went back down there, I mean, the bottom of this ravine was just all covered in leaves and everything. I mean, there was no way you could tell where anything had been buried, so we started to do an article search, which the dogs were trained in both tracking and articles. So it's, you know, we start that, and in about 60 seconds, Buck had the first gun. Starts digging in the ground, sure enough, uncovers it, and here's the butt of the gun. And about 30 seconds later, he had the second one. So I'd say that's probably, you know, the biggest dog case that we ever had that was certainly very exciting for both of us.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And how long were you on the canine unit?
Actually, it was about 2 years that I was in the unit before I got actually promoted to investigations then. But one of the other things, too, is I got a letter that's framed there from William Webster, the director of the FBI at the time, for catching those bank robbers. So I was pretty proud of that. It wasn't every day that you got a letter from the director of the FBI.
Fantastic.
So, yes, then I got promoted to investigations and worked mainly child abuse cases at that point. And
was your title different then?
Yes, it was detective. Mm-hmm. And that was
About the early 80s.
Early 80s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And people were, it's like, well, how can you work those cases? And I always looked at child abuse cases like we were doing something about the bad guy. I mean, those, you know, children are obviously the real victims, you know, when it comes to crime. But I always looked like we're doing something about the bad guys. That's a good thing. So a lot of it has to do with an attitude when you work those cases, because it's some of those can be pretty traumatic, and just the things that you see that happen to those children, it's pretty sad. But while I was in investigations, Multnomah County needed some help, and so I went over there for about 6 months and worked undercover with Multnomah County, and it was because I was female. They needed a female to fit in for some of the cases we were going to work. We did a lot of undercover buys for dope, stolen property, that type of thing. So I would team up with a male, and women being, you know, not being common in law enforcement, we made a good team because people weren't expecting that we would be undercover police officers. So we would sell diamonds to pawn shops and that type of thing. Did one very large dope deal down in Tualatin. The bank loaned us $600,000 in cash. We told the bad guy it was $1 million, but who could tell? I mean, you open this briefcase and there's all these hundreds, and it's like, well, what's like $1 million? So that was pretty exciting. We did a lot of different cases there. So one case where an ex-con just gotten out of prison in Salem and hooked up with bad people again, and we were buying guns from him at this point. And we'd set the deal up to do in a parking lot. Already met with Salem police and had the whole scheme down, but I have to tell you, when the Salem police came rushing in, because we didn't want to blow our cover at that point and point their guns at us as well as the bad guys, it kind of puts you on edge a little bit. It makes you appreciate what the other side goes through when that actually happens. And it was funny because when we went to court, the bad guy still, he refused to believe that I was a police officer. I mean, it's like, I just couldn't be a cop. I'm sitting up there in uniform on the stand testifying against him, and he just doesn't want to believe it. But so that was pretty fun too. That was a pretty exciting time. We got a lot of variety, a lot of different things to do.
And then after your detective, where did your career go?
From there, I got promoted to sergeant, and went back on the road in patrol, which I dearly loved. I mean, patrols. My heart's always been in patrol. Kind of the heartbeat of the organization. So truly, truly loved being a sergeant. I mean, it was lots of fun. And part of it was because all of a sudden, as an officer, you're responsible for a district in the city, and that's it. Well, as a sergeant, you got the whole city, and you didn't have to write near as many reports because you had officers to do that, but you had to supervise them. So it was really, it was a very fun time. I would say one of the most fun times in my career was a sergeant in patrol. And I did that for a time period. I spent part of my time as an administrative sergeant as well, and started getting into the admin portion of it at that point. And then also went over and supervised the countywide narcotics team. We had a lieutenant from the sheriff's office, and then two sergeants, one from the sheriff's office, and myself that were supervisor. And all we did was work felony drug cases.
And this is Washington.
And this was Washington County. And that was pretty exciting, too, because, I mean, like I say, it was, you know, sometimes we would go 24 hours straight on a drug case. I mean, if we ended up busting somebody and they would roll on their supplier, well, you just had to keep going. I mean, you couldn't take a break. And I can remember one time going probably 30 hours straight. Pretty exhausting, but, I mean, you work up the ladder and get the bad guys. So, so that was fun.
What was the biggest deal that you uncovered in terms of money and quantity of drugs?
With the WIN team, gosh, I've got some pictures in here. I mean, we'd get up into the thousands of dollars on some of those cases, and it's really hard to remember what some of the the biggest ones were. But I can remember one case we did. Here in Hillsboro, and there was a point in time where that's all we were doing was drug cases in Hillsboro. And I think we laid out like $20,000 on a bed. I mean, you know, just counting the money and laying it out, and it just was amazing. I mean, you just go into some real rat hole houses. I mean, just, and yet, you know, here's people with, you know, $20,000, $30,000. So, and I mean, now, certainly we've done cases that are, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, so times have changed.
And what years were you a sergeant?
I got promoted to sergeant in 1984, and actually I was very surprised to get promoted. There was eight of us, I think, that applied for that in that process. And Nancy Jones was the other female that was with the department, and she was a sergeant. I really didn't think they would promote me to sergeant, because when I got hired and was in patrol, she went to investigations. When I went to investigations, she went back out to patrol. So it was like, okay, I was in investigations at the time. I didn't think that they would promote me to sergeant, put me, because you had to go back out onto patrol at that point, because that's where the need was. And so I was very surprised that I beat out those seven other guys, and then they actually did promote me, and we both went back on the road. So that was kind of a milestone, I think, for the police department to take that leap at that time.
And at that time, there was only one other woman sergeant?
I think there was still only one other woman in the department at that time, and that there was just the two of us.
And about how many total male officers?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'd have to go back and look at that point. You know, what our numbers were. I really don't remember. I'd have to go back to an annual report or something and see what it was. But there was still, I mean, obviously the number of male officers was growing and the number of female officers wasn't.
And so these sort of chauvinistic attitudes were still persisted then until?
Yes.
At least into the mid-80s.
Yes, I think they were.
And so then you were a sergeant, and then what happened?
Let's see, got promoted to lieutenant then, after that, and that was an administrative position. That's when it truly became more administrative, less out in the field and more in the office. And that was in 89, I'm gonna guess.
And were you happy to be in administration? Were you, was the kind of anxiety, I'm sure, that goes along with the thrill of doing the patrol, was that getting to you a little bit?
No, not really, because I truly loved what I was doing, but it was just kind of a natural progression, it seemed. And at that point in time, we kind of had two divisions. We had an administrative division and then a patrol division. And we traded back and forth. I mean, we'd spend some time. So I did some of the administrative stuff. I mean, I learned how to do the budgeting for the department and all of that. But then we would rotate, and so I would get to go back into patrol. And it was kind of fun overseeing patrol then and having the sergeants report and working with them. So, like I say, from that standpoint, it was fun. But it was, and I think that's what has made it so interesting, because there's always been challenges coming down the pipe. There was always something else to look forward to, something else to do that was different. And I was always learning. So that was important to me, because I never got bored with anything. Because in all honesty, I mean, over the years, I think it's changed fairly rapidly. I mean, I've had a lot of opportunities to do a lot of different things over the years. So, and then from lieutenant, I was promoted to captain. And then we did a reclassification to commander, and then this.
About what year was that?
I should have those. I'm kind of embarrassed not to know all of that, Barb.
That's okay.
I'd have to go back and look.
That's okay. I mean, I'm just sort of curious as to, you know, probably
I early think 90s. 90, let's see, when Chief Louie came in 1992, I'm trying to think, I was a lieutenant. There were three lieutenants at that time. So that was in 92, and then 96, it was commander, I believe.
That's pretty amazing that you were a woman and one of three lieutenants. Do you think being a woman was advantageous in a sense, because maybe the force felt that, you know, they should have a woman in a prevalent position, or do you think, you know, it was just purely on, you know, your background? How do you feel about that?
You know, I don't mean to be egotistical, but I really do think that it was my background and my work. I think it had nothing to do with being a female. I know that was one of the questions the chief was Aspen, he promoted me to deputy chief last July by somebody was, well, you know, is it, did it have anything to do with her being a woman? And his response was absolutely not. And so I think I've worked very hard, you know, to get where I am. So I don't think it had anything to do with that.
So then you were a commander.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened then? What kind of responsibilities and duties did you have as a commander?
Well, again, as the city, you know, during all this time, the city's growing as well, and a lot of changes are coming on. We're doing a lot of strategic planning. We're reaching out to the community to see what, you know, what they're looking for in a police department. So your divisions remain pretty similar. I mean, you have an operations division, which has a patrol and investigations, and they were separated for a time period where we had investigations as one division, patrol as one, and then admin. So we would generally rotate between those in an effort to, one, train everybody across the board so you have a good broad understanding of the total organization, which obviously at this level is important. So we would switch around between those. So I've spent a fair amount of time in admin. I've spent time in investigations and in patrol. But my heart kind of always goes back to the patrol.
And so how many years did you do that?
Probably 5 or 6 years as a commander. And then last July, promoted to deputy chief.
That's a fabulous career.
Well, it is. And, you know, as part of that going through, I was appointed by the governor to the Oregon Board of Investigators, which was the first new board they created in years and years and years. So I worked on that, and that was about licensing PIs. Other things that.
When were you appointed?
That would have been in the mid-90s that I was on that. And then, gosh, I participated with the air show for years, I mean, as a public safety perspective, and then moved on and volunteered with that organization as well. I'm currently on the Hillsborough Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. So it's an opportunity to reach out to the community and do other things as well, you know. Although, getting to be fairly large department, and it's taking more of my time internally now. So,
what are some of your duties as deputy chief? What kinds of things are your responsibilities?
Well, right now it's the internal organization running the department. This allows the chief to go out and do the things outside the department that he needs to do and that he's involved in. So, really, I'm responsible for running the department and keeping things on task internally.
Big job.
Yeah, it keeps me busy.
do you miss your days on patrol? Or?
Yes, I in all honesty, I do. I mean, I really enjoyed those. It's fun. I mean, now I still respond to calls. I mean, if something major happens, you know, we go out, we respond to those to help and to be available. But it's not the same as being there and being the first car on the scene. It's an after-the-fact thing that we get to show up now. But I still do go on ride-alongs with patrol occasionally, and it's just fun. It's just fun.
And do you ever, you know, have anxieties about, you know, the danger involved? And do you ever think to yourself, well, I don't know, if this is something that I want to continue, or does that never really...
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, I do worry about the officers on the road, you know, and their safety, just because the world has changed a lot and continues to change. But as far as for my personal safety or going out doing the job, not at all. It was a couple months ago. I was out driving in my car, and a hot call came down. I mean, it was a robbery situation. And I thought, well, I'm another set of eyes and ears. I'll go make the area check as well, because they broadcast a description of the vehicle. And sure enough, we found the vehicle. And it's kind of funny, it's that old sixth sense. I thought, I think I should go up to this area and start driving around, and I did. And sure enough, just as I'm driving down the road, the car's coming out of a driveway, and there's another officer in a black and white coming up the other direction. So that was actually the second car in the felony car stop, and I don't have any qualms about jumping out and helping at all. It's still exciting.
If I can, I'd like to kind of revisit, you know, the idea of women in the force. And do you have any kind of notion as to how attitudes have changed since you first started your career towards women, both by you know, the public and by, you know, your fellow law enforcement people?
You know, there's certainly been a transition, because I think now we've got about 18% women in law enforcement here at Hillsborough, which is great. And I think one of the things that's where the change started to happen would be, like, when you go out on a call, and there were times where you'd have male officers, I'd be there with the male officer, and the person wouldn't want to talk to the male officer. They're like, I'll talk to her, but I'm not talking to you. And it's, and there were times where it would happen just the opposite, though. I mean, you know, where some people were, I'm not talking to a female, I mean, I want to talk to the guy. But I think when the male officers started seeing that there are times where women could do things that they couldn't do, that they began to realize that, well, there's a benefit for having, you know, somebody different out here to help. And so it's a gradual transition that happens over time. And then just as you get more women in the field, you know, they show that they can do the job, they're just as capable as a man doing the job. People come to realize that, okay, times are changing, this is okay. And I think, you know, there's other fields that it's happened in as well. So I think in the teaching field, you see a lot more male teachers now than you used to, and I think it's the same thing. I mean, people start to realize both sides can do the job, both male and female are capable of doing the job, and so they become more accepting of it. But it's a transition, it takes time, and it's been, I mean, at times a painful process to go through. There were times where, you know, there were some pretty cruel things said about, well, gee, why did Lila get promoted? You know, it's because is she the token female? You know, who's she sleeping with? I mean, that's pretty cruel. But, you know, sometimes people are cruel. And but you learn to live with it. You learn to work through it. And you know what the real truth is about the situation. So.
Can you describe your philosophy of police work? What are your particular insights since you've been, you know, career law enforcement employee? What's your kind of perspective of the big picture of law enforcement?
Law enforcement's really, truly has changed over the years in a lot of ways, but I truly believe, for me, it's pretty basic, and it's pretty simple. It comes down to you always do the right thing for the right reason. Because as a police officer, you have a lot of authority. I mean, you have the ability to take somebody's life. That's a huge responsibility. And it's very important that the power that's invested in police officers doesn't go to their head, that they don't get big egos about, you know, what they have the ability to do. So for me, it's very basic. We need to always do the right thing for the right reason. And it may sound, you know, pretty simple, but to me, that's the reality, is you just don't get carried away with it, with what we've been empowered to do. I mean, it's very important. We need to protect the public. We need to serve the public. And so, yeah, do the right thing for the right reason.
And what will you do when you retire? Or will you?
You know, Barbara, I don't know. I was eligible to retire 2 years ago, but I'm not ready to retire. I still really enjoy what I do, and I still think I have a lot to offer. So I'm not ready to. There's great people in this organization that are coming up behind me, and when I do go, you know, somebody will step up to the plate and do, you know, I'm sure a better job than I'm doing. So I've still got a few years left in me to, you know, keep kicking, and I'm still having fun. Gosh, when I do retire, I expect that I will just be more involved in the community. I volunteer for a lot of things now. I help on the Tuolumne fundraiser for their dinner dance. I participate in Jackson Bottom with the Community Wings and the their fundraising and participate with the air show. So I love this community. Hillsborough's a wonderful community, and I just see me being more involved in the community and participating and still being around here. So I think that's probably what I'll do when I retire. I don't see myself going and getting another job, but I'm not the type of person to sit at home either. I have a lot of outside interests. I love to do crafty things. I love to garden. So I'm always experimenting and trying to learn new things. So I'm sure that's probably what I'll be doing when I retire. We enjoy golfing, and so love to get out on the golf course as much as I can and be active.
And what about the officers that come after you, particularly women? Do you have any sort of particular hopes for them in terms of their working in this field?
I just hope that it continues to grow as it has, and that, you know, at some point in time it's a 50-50 mix is where I think that we should be. It's kind of interesting when I look at just some of the basic differences between men and women and how they handle things. I mean, that's where it's so important. I mean, women in general will have this probably a more understanding side when they handle things, where guys are sometimes more to the point and direct. And so it's that mix between the two that I think makes things work so well. So, yes, I hope to see more women, come up the ranks, be chief of police here in Hillsborough at some point in time. So there's, like I said, it needs to be 50-50 across the board.
Is there anything you'd like to add that we haven't talked about that either you think would be important for people to know about, Hillsborough PD or women in law enforcement or anything about your career that you'd like to share?
Gosh, it's tough because when I think back, it's, 27 years. I could probably talk for hours about all the different things. But I would say that I think that it's worthwhile. I would encourage young people, if they've got an interest, to do some things like look at cadet programs, reserve programs, those types of things, to see if they're interested in it. I'd encourage anybody to go on a ride-along with the police department and see what it is that, we actually do out there. I know when people get pulled over and get cited, they're not always happy about that, but it serves a purpose, and like I say, sometimes it's good for people to see the other side. I have an older brother, and he wanted to know what I did for a living, so he came on a ride-along with me one time, and he was pretty amazed at what his little sister did to make a living. So, like I say, it's interesting, and I would encourage people to, come out and look and see what their police department is doing, in either in Hillsborough or anywhere else, because we've expanded, we've grown up a lot from the traditional, arresting bad guys. We reach out into the community in a lot more ways now, and we're always looking for volunteers in different areas. You talk about how things have changed. We look at high-tech crimes now, and we have a whole unit that deals with nothing but high-tech crimes and computers and all of that. So it's not just arresting the cops and robbers in the streets anymore, type of a thing. It's looking into a lot of different things. So there's a lot of variety in law enforcement and police work. And, I would encourage people to take a look, especially the young people, because it can be a very exciting career.
Great. Thanks so much. I'm going to just turn the tape off.